Joining us on the phone right now to discuss this situation is Dr. Stephen Zunes. He is a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, where he chairs the program in Middle East studies. Hello, Stephen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking the time to be with us today. First, I wanted to, if I may, ask a bit of a background question to you. We've been hearing so many different perspectives on how this began. We've heard from Israel that they're retaliating for rocket fire, that they're trying to put a stop to Hamas launching rockets on Israeli towns. And on the other side of it, we've heard, well, there was a ceasefire and it was violated by Israel when they went in November and assassinated a number of Hamas people, and that the Hamas then vowed retaliation, and this is how the rockets got started again. What's the truth in your view of how this began?
I mean, they're certainly both sides share responsibility. Hamas for not renewing the ceasefire, and for Israel engaging in a series of provocative attacks that seemed designed to force Hamas to break the ceasefire. So both sides certainly share fault here. I think, though, what's important is to emphasize the proportionality, and that while in no way can Hamas's rocket attacks, lobbed in the direction of civilian populated areas in Israel, be justified legally or morally, that they pale in comparison to the enormous damage to civilians in the Gaza Strip. At least a quarter of the 500 people killed have been civilians with no affiliation with the Hamas government, and many of the people who were formerly connected with Hamas were traffic policemen, secretaries and administrators and civilian offices, that kind of thing. So we really are talking about a massacre on a grand scale here.
What about the argument, though, that Israel is trying to target only military targets, and that they claim that among the they've struck many mosques, and they say they're being used as weapon caches. They also have hit many ambulances, and I know in the past, I don't know if they're claiming this now, but in the past they've claimed that ambulances have been used to transport weapons. Now, there's been no evidence, as far as I know, to support that, but they've also hit pharmacies, police stations, ministries, government ministries, civilian homes, schools. Are these accidents in an overall military campaign that is trying to only hit military targets? What is your view?
I have no on the ground knowledge of the details on this. I do know that in the past, when Israel has made similar claims on the ground, investigations by Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, the International Red Cross, and others have more often than not contradicted these Israeli claims. It's also apparent that they're there have been a number of attacks that appear to be nowhere near any even by the broadest definition, be conceived as legitimate targets. And the mosques that have been hit have tended to be those that were very political mosques, that tend to be associated with Hamas, but did not appear to have weapon stores or anything like that. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have accused Israel of committing war crimes. They've also, of course, accused Hamas of war crimes through their use of rockets against civilians in Israel, but that Israel itself is clearly engaging in war crimes on a far greater scale, and they have said so quite explicitly. In fact, to the point where Amnesty International has a very rare rebuke has explicitly criticized the U.S. government for its lopsided reaction of of condemning only the Hamas attacks and defending the Israeli attacks. They've even called on the Bush administration to suspend U.S. military aid to Israel, given that it's U.S. weaponry which is largely responsible for the civilian casualties.
Now, I don't know what some of the Israeli officials are saying now, but there was claims out of the Israeli government that there is not a humanitarian crisis in Gaza, that they're getting enough food and medical supplies and other things in there. And on the other side, we've heard, yes, there is a drastic situation, a growing humanitarian crisis. What is your knowledge of that?
Well, it's been a humanitarian crisis ever since, as far back as when Israel tightened the embargo back on November 5th, even before this fighting escalated. And, this has been confirmed by, UN officials, the International Red Cross, and other rescue agencies. I mean, there's no question that there is a very serious humanitarian crisis. Indeed, the death toll, from people with waterborne diseases because of the destruction of the sewage flowing in the street, because of the bombing of utilities, people unable to get to the hospitals for non-military related emergencies, et cetera, et cetera. That may even surpass the death toll from the bombing itself.
Now, Israel has said they pulled out of Gaza and that they're no longer occupying it, and that instead of taking advantage of that and creating wealth for themselves and a positive situation, that Hamas has gone the other direction and just chosen to go all out against Israel, and probably Israel would blame Hamas for this humanitarian crisis, and I'm certain the U.S. would as well. So what is your take on that?
Yeah, well, legally speaking, the Gaza Strip has continued to be under Israeli occupation in the sense that even though until a few days ago when Israeli forces launched their ground invasion, there had not been Israeli troops inside the territory, except for some brief incursions, and the illegal settlements had been withdrawn. Israel was still in legal occupation in the sense that they totally controlled everything going in and out of the territory, not just between Gaza Strip and Israel, which of course they have a right to do, but between Gaza Strip and Egypt, and between Gaza Strip and the Mediterranean. They had destroyed the airport and seaport and wouldn't allow any comings and goings. And it was essentially an open-air prison. And and as a result was hardly a viable autonomous unit. I mean, they no foreign investor, for example, is going to set up a factory if they can't reliably export their goods. And so it dramatically increased the poverty and deprivation there. So that was it's hardly and similarly, the withdrawal was unilateral. It was not negotiated. By no means could really be seen as a test case for an autonomous Palestinian entity. It's as if the Israelis had deliberately set up this impossible situation to somehow prove the Palestinians were incapable of self-governance. It's tragic that so many American politicians, including leading Democrats, have been repeating this lie.
You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 FM. I'm speaking with Dr. Stephen Zunes. Again, he's a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco. He's also the author of the highly acclaimed Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism, from Common Courage Press. My understanding is that what Israel is saying, the Israeli government is saying at the moment, is that they have four main demands: an end to Gaza rocket fire, a halt to Palestinian attacks, international supervision of a truce, and an agreement to stop Hamas from rearming. On the other hand, Hamas is demanding a cessation of Israeli attacks and an opening of vital Gaza-Israel cargo crossings. What is likely, in your view? I know it's hard to predict what's going to happen, but is it possible that all of this could happen?
All of them are quite reasonable, but it's unrealistic to expect that just one side's demands are going to be met. The United States has generally sided with the Israeli position that it is only up to Hamas to unilaterally have a ceasefire, unilaterally recognize Israel, unilaterally pretty much give in, and the United States just on Friday blocked the UN Security Council from adopting a balanced resolution, insisting that it contain language that pretty much put all the blame and responsibility on Hamas and virtually none of it on the U.S.-backed Israeli government.
What is the likely outcome of all of this? What do you think Israel's objective is? Do you think they're going to achieve it? And do you? What on the other side, we have Hamas saying, you bombed our mosques, therefore we're going to bomb your synagogues. You've killed our children, therefore we have a right to kill your children now. It seems like this is devolving further and further and further, as especially as more civilians die and the world, and especially those in, obviously in the Gaza Strip and in the West Bank, but in the Arab world are reacting to this. What is the likely outcome of all of this?
It's hard to say. I'm just sort of illustrates, the obvious fact that just violence creates a greater violence, and that's why I disagree with those who claim that supporting what the Israeli government is doing is being pro-Israel, because ultimately this is going to hurt Israel. Every single time the Israelis have tried to crush Hamas through military means or through repression, Hamas has just gotten stronger. It has increased their popular appeal. We saw how just in the past 15 years Hamas has gone from the support of only 15% of the Palestinian population to nearly half of the Palestinian population, and they grew even further as a result of this. And so, this is, obviously the Palestinians are the most immediate and most large-scale victims of this, but in the longer term, so are the Israelis. And indeed, Israeli had been killed by rocket fire, for years until Israel launched these attacks. And I think it's really a tragedy for both peoples. And I think we really need to recognize that the problem with U.S. policy is not that it's too pro-Israel, but that it's anti-peace, that it's supporting some of those right-wing extremist elements. In fact, the majority of Israeli public opinion, including the mayors of the cities in Israel and towns that have been subjected to rocket fire, have called for direct negotiations with the Hamas leadership, something that the United States, including incoming President-elect Barack Obama, have opposed.
So you don't think that this is going to weaken Hamas? That's what Israel is saying their objective is to target their infrastructure and destroy their ability to fire rockets and destroy their ability to get things from the outside, through Egypt or whatever, and to weaken them. You don't think that could...
Just the opposite. History has shown that it only strengthens them. The irony is that the majority of Palestinians and the majority of Israelis, support a two-state solution, of a viable Palestinian state approximating the boundaries of 1967 before the Israeli conquest, and mutual security guarantees, etc. But the behavior by elements on both sides, tend to make Israelis and Palestinians assume the worst of the other. And the United States, by encouraging the more hardline elements in Israel, which have launched this war, ignoring the pleas of the thousands of Israelis who are demonstrating on the streets against their government's actions, it creates a situation where it only encourages the hardliners on both sides.
Now, one of the claims, my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe the Israeli government, some members of it, are claiming that Iran is backing Hamas and that this is kind of growing and this claim has been spreading. What do you make of that?
Iran was never really a factor in the equation until very recently. In fact, Hamas traditionally got its support from the U.S.-backed family dictatorships in the Gulf, you know, Saudi Arabia and the Emirates and the like. Iran came in large part after the U.S.-led sanctions on the Palestine Authority, when they began giving some limited financial support, perhaps some limited military components, perhaps some training of some specialized units. Though, again, they're not a major factor. The Syrian role has been exaggerated as well. I mean, Hamas is a fundamentalist Sunni movement with a strong nationalist orientation. Whereas Iran is a Shiite government, and and Syria is a secular government. So those who are trying to make it into a bigger proxy war, that kind of thing, I think are exaggerating the outside impact.
There's a lot of Palestinians that are extremely upset, and a lot of citizens of Arab nations as well, that the governments of a lot of the Arab nations haven't spoken out or taken action. Has there been any statements from Arab leaders?
There have been quite a few statements, but that's sort of the classic thing that goes back for decades. The Arab governments will rhetorically support the Palestinians, but not do much practically. In this particular case, it's awkward for them because Hamas is a pretty radical group, and they don't like their homegrown radical Islamist movement, so they don't want to do anything to strengthen Hamas. But of course, the ordinary Arabs, even those who don't support Hamas's extremist ideology or tactics, of course, are horrified with the carnage and are pressing their governments to do more. What they can do realistically is limited, particularly since many of them are dependent on the United States for foreign aid and military assistance.
Now, in just a few moments ago, you were saying that Hamas got some of their early backing from, some of the Arab nations. Could you repeat that?
Yeah. The Saudis and not as much the Saudi government, but, wealthy Saudis, some members of the royal family and others, would send in money. In fact, ironically, the Israelis originally encouraged the antecedents of Hamas because they wanted to really push the Islamist side of Palestinian society, because at that point they saw the big threat coming from the secular and leftist and nationalist movements within the Palestine Liberation Organization. I mean, they allowed Hamas types to have their own radio station. They allowed them much more freedom of movement. And I remember when I first visited Gaza back in the early 80s, that the Israelis, who would send in troops immediately if somebody even wrote some anti-occupation graffiti on a wall, stood by while a Hamas mob sacked and burned a PLO-run health clinic because it was offering family planning services to women. And even U.S. officials, while refusing to talk to anyone with the PLO, even its more moderate elements, would routinely meet with Hamas people at the U.S. consulate in East Jerusalem. And I outline all this, particularly the U.S. role in the rise of Hamas, in the article in Alternet. It's on the home page today. It was the lead article yesterday. It's just, you scroll down just a little bit, and you'll find it. And that's, again, alternet.org. And it's about the how the United States contributed to the rise of Hamas. That Hamas would not be in charge of Gaza today were it not for a series of misguided U.S. policies, including an attempted coup against a coalition government, which resulted in Hamas consolidating its hold of Gaza about a year and a half ago.
Now, one of the things in the San Jose Mercury News today, one of the quotes is, Israel's military chief said Hamas fighters were trying to draw soldiers deeper into Gaza's sprawling, densely packed urban areas where the military said militants were shielding themselves behind civilians. We've heard this claim over and over, not just now, but in the first intifada and the second intifada, that militants shield themselves with civilians. And I'm wondering if you think there's any truth to that at all.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because there was a resolution in the House of Representatives, apparently in anticipation of Israel's invasion, where it made, in no less than three occasions, claims that Hamas was using human shields. I talked to Joe Stork, who's with the Middle East Division of Human Rights Watch, and he said that you know Hamas has not done all that it should do in terms of being careful not to have military operations near where civilians were, but they had not, they found no evidence whatsoever of human shields being used in the legal sense, that is, hiding behind civilians, as to try to use them as a deterrent, to some kind of counterattack. There was also a resolution in Congress 2.5 years ago that claimed that Hezbollah was using human shields, and another one earlier this year, and our Congressman Sam Farr was among those who voted for it, and I contacted his office repeatedly saying Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International in these detailed, like 300-page studies, explicitly said they found no evidence whatsoever of the use of human shields. Can you show any evidence that contradicts these findings by these reputable human rights groups that actually had people on the ground, did all the extensive legwork, whatever. And Farr's office was unable to find any evidence to the contrary. In fact, I even got a call from his chief of staff demanding that I stop harassing her staff. And I was saying, well, I'm not harassing them. I'm just saying if the congressman is going to go on record challenging the credibility of Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, you better give, you better be willing to provide your constituents with some evidence. It appears that there's going to be another resolution, which is going to be on the floor of the House, perhaps as early as tomorrow, almost certainly this week, which is also going to put that claim into writing. And again, from what I have seen so far from Amnesty, Human Rights Watch, and others, there is no basis whatsoever to this claim. Now, this might be a good time for me to mention something to your listeners. There is a petition to Congressman Farr asking him not to support any resolution supporting Israel's attacks on Gaza that contradict findings by these reputable human rights groups and does not recognize that both sides are at fault. And I can give the web address of that petition right now if for your listeners who are in a position to write it down, and if listeners who are not in a position of writing it down, you can call the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which is at 423-1626. Again, that's 831-423-1626, and they can tell you how you can sign. But the web address for the petition is www.ipetitions.com/petition/FARR, F-A-R-R. Again, that's www.ipetitions, ipetitions.com/petition/FARR, F-A-R-R. We have over 200 signatures, including those of some former Santa Cruz mayors and county Democratic officials and others, because people were very, very upset when FARR has supported these right-wing resolutions in the past. Public opinion polls show that registered Democrats nationwide opposed Israel's actions by a more than 3-to-1 margin. We can assume that in this district, which is more progressive than most, that margin is even higher. And we are encouraging FAR to side with Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, not with the Bush administration, when this resolution comes to the floor later this week. You can also just call the congressman's office, either here in the 17th District or in Washington, D.C., because it's really a shame when you have somebody like Sam Farr, who on average is actually better than most on human rights issues, when even he goes along supports the Bush administration policy. It's quite disturbing, and it serves as discredit the good works of Amnesty International and other Human Rights Watch when you have people like Sam Farr publicly challenging their research.
And I jotted that down. I'll announce that again in a little while. That way, people can sign that petition. I just have a couple more questions for you. We have also in the San Jose Mercury News today, it says that the EU External Relations Commissioner, Benita Ferrero-Waldner, has said that the violence has to stop. French President Nicolas Sarkozy is speaking with Israeli and Palestinian leaders, and while he's blaming Hamas for this, he is also condemning Israel's use of ground troops. And also, in the Abbas apparently is traveling to New York soon. I'm wondering if you think any of this is going to make a difference.
Because the United States has the veto power in the Security Council, even these best efforts by the Europeans and others for a more balanced perspective is going to be difficult. I mean, this is yet another case of just how out of sync the United States is with the rest of the world. And when you have even conservative European leaders like Sarkozy of France and Pope Benedict and others recognizing both sides are to blame, to have the United States backed by an overwhelming bipartisan majority of Congress, shows how out of the mainstream the United States is, that we have in many ways become a rogue superpower.
So the U.S. government was, as far as I know, the only vote vetoing a U.N. Security Council statement on Saturday night, which called for an immediate ceasefire and condemned the civilian deaths. Also, U.S. officials, as you've pointed out over and over, have maintained overall their firm support for Israel and squarely blamed Hamas pretty much across the board, Democrat and Republican, with few exceptions. What is it that we can do as American citizens to affect any change on this?
Well, I think that, as I mentioned, support that petition to Sam Farr, otherwise communicate with him on this. And whatever congressional district you're in, to let your members of Congress know that there'll be no hope for peace if we just put all the blame on one side, and particularly the weaker of the two sides. This is not just anti-Palestinian, but it's ultimately anti-Israel as well, because it hurts Israel's legitimate long-term strategic interests. And to also emphasize that. If people go and ignore the pleas of human rights groups that have been critical of both sides, that recognize how both sides are wrong, that it really harms the potential for international humanitarian law to be enforced anywhere. We're at a particularly critical time because today we are seeding a new Congress with an expanded Democratic majority, and in just a couple weeks, a new Democratic president. And from all the signs coming out of the Democratic leadership, and even the Obama transition team, it sounds like on this, the first big crisis of this new administration, new Congress, they are taking positions virtually identical with that of Bush. And, we've had 8 years of disaster under Bush, and people voted for change. And what is, and so how come, we have people like Nancy Pelosi, and the Speaker of the House, and Steny Hoyer, the Democratic, the majority leader in the House, and Harry Reid, the Democratic majority leader in the Senate, and Howard Berman, the Democratic head of the Foreign Relations Committee, and all these people essentially giving the Bush line, saying it's all Hamas's fault, Israel's doing the right thing, don't pay attention to what these human rights groups are saying. I'm just really taking this very, very extreme position. As of midnight tonight, I'll be having a second article posted on Alternet that goes into details about what the Democrats and how they have betrayed their constituency by siding with Bush on this issue. So I think we just really need to give them hell because, frankly, Israel's not going to change its policies unless the Bush administration changes its policies. The Bush administration's not going to change its policies unless the Democratic-controlled Congress pushes them to change their support. And that's not going to change until the grassroots demand that they change. I mean, the way we can change what Bush or Olmert does, if even Sam Farr, is just taking this hard right-wing position. So I say really pressure Farr and others not to support this resolution that's coming to the floor any day now. And if they do, I say it's time to give him hell next time he comes to Santa Cruz or wherever for a town meeting. I would encourage, in fact, and I'm quite willing to participate in personally civil disobedience action at his office. I mean, people didn't put up with this kind of thing when Democrats supported U.S. backing of the Salvadoran junta in the 1980s when they were killing thousands of people. We didn't put up with it when Democrats were supporting Indonesia when they were killing all these people in the East Timor. Why should we stand by when you have Democrats supporting the Israelis when they're killing innocent people? We really need to organize on this, not as an anti-Israel thing, not even as a pro-Palestinian thing, but simply as a pro-human rights thing.
I just have a final question for you. What kind of specific changes do you think people should be demanding from Farr and the Obama administration and others on this issue?
Basically, a support for international humanitarian law, which includes challenging Hamas when it violates it, but also challenging Israel when it violates it. Now, we have a lot more leverage with Israel because the American taxpayer pays over $4 billion annually to make this possible. And, if we threaten to cut off funds, as Amnesty International and others have encouraged the United States to do, it would bring the carnage to an end. And so we need to really push that all U.S. aid, should be based on, and not just towards Israel, but to all countries, be based on their adherence to international humanitarian law, and that they don't use this weaponry against civilians. In fact, there are U.S. laws that forbid countries from using U.S. weapons against civilians. Let's make it clear as a human rights issue that to recognize that Israeli security and Palestinian rights are not mutually exclusive, but in fact mutually dependent upon the other. And if they don't, they're going to pay a political price. And just like I mentioned as an aside here, I mean, a lot of people have this exaggerated view of AIPAC and the pro-Israel lobby and that kind of thing. But, it's interesting when that resolution I mentioned supporting Israel's invasion of Lebanon and all, there weren't that many Democrats, unfortunately, who voted against it. There were even fewer Republicans. But every Democrat that opposed that resolution or even voted neutral was reelected that November by an even bigger margin than they had been 2 years earlier. So this idea that it's somehow political suicide to oppose the lobby or whatever really isn't borne out by the facts. But I do hope to make it so that they recognize there will be political consequences if they end up supporting the kind of thing that Israel is doing right now, and if they support and defend and rationalize for any kind of human rights abuses anywhere by any party.
I've been speaking with Dr. Stephen Zunes, a professor of politics and international studies at the University of San Francisco, and also the author of the highly acclaimed book Tinderbox, U.S. Middle East Policy and the Roots of Terrorism. He has an article on alternet.org called America's Hidden Role in Hamas's Rise to Power that was posted a Saturday. And then you have another one coming out tonight, you said, right?
Yeah, yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's alternet.org. And in just a moment, I'll give the web address for the petition for Sam Farr and contact numbers for Sam Farr's office. Thanks so much for joining me today, Stephen.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Take care. So to reach Sam Farr, well, first of all, to sign that petition, it is www.ipetitions.com/petition/Farr. And I'll go ahead and spell that out for you. www.ipetitions.com/petition/Farr. And if you can't write that down and you need to get more information, you can call the Resource Center for Nonviolence at 423-1626. That's 423-1626, if you can remember that. So ipetitions.com/petition/Farr, and his last name is spelled F-A-R-R. Also, telephone numbers for Sam Farr's office in Santa Cruz, the number is 429-1976. That's 429-1976. And his Washington office is 202-225-2861. That's area code 202-225-2861. And Stephen suggested contacting him here locally and maybe also in Washington, and just asking him not to support any resolution that is one-sided and condemns only Hamas in the situation.